Today, welcome. It's Linda Benn, and I have the pleasure of interviewing Jason Jackson. And Jason is a naturopath and herbalist and has about 30 years of experience in clinical nutrition and herbalism, and is a wealth of knowledge. And I feel honored to be interviewing Jason today because he not only has written the best-selling book of Making Babies and specializing in fertility and reproductive health, but Jason has also appeared on media and radio shows and been a writer for several journals and magazines, and also being the naturopath to the stars and helping celebrities to have a baby, not physically, but advising on his wealth of knowledge of treatments and how to help celebrities to get healthier in order to fall pregnant. So he's been named the Fertility King and is now based in just north of Brisbane on the Sunshine Coast. So welcome, Jason, and thanks for joining me today. And
yeah, thank you so much for that introduction. It's funny hearing that back. It's been a wonderful journey. You know, like I say, we worked together ourselves for many, many years back in Brisbane. Then you had your sabbatical up in the States, and now you're back home. Back in Oz. My background originally was in medical science and sports medicine before sort of getting introduced into naturopathy. Couldn't even pronounce the word back in those days. And I was injured, actually. I had a bit of a sports background prior to that, and I was injured when I was nursing. And it essentially paralyzed me for several years. So I wasn't really getting a lot of joy, from the orthodox side of things. Not to say it was not absolutely necessary, because I had to have a major spine fusion, and they basically were saying that I'd probably never walk again. And I sort of had the opinion, I think I might. So I was actually in rehab and at the, what was the PA hospital, where we were essentially learning how to walk again. And it's hard when you've been from an athletic background to basically being an invalid, and so that was a long journey, on a lot of medications, which sadly were, rather than enhancing my health, were really deteriorating my health. But I ran into, there was a fellow there who was in a car accident, and he was a naturopath. And again, back in those days, it was a little new here in Australia, but he was healing very, very quickly, and a lot of the doctors and nurses and other patients at the hospital were very inquisitive at why this guy was doing so much better than the rest of us. So we all rallied up the courage to go speak to him, and he told us a few of these things. He was on these herbs and new vitamins and minerals, and he was healing very well, and he gave me a few ideas. And I'm thinking, well, I was at that sort of crossroads in my life where I think, well, the way things are progressing, I'm going downhill at a bad, big rate. So, and being more classically medically sort of trained, this natural medicine stuff back then to me was a bit woo-woo, sort of witch doctory. But I think, like a lot of people that go into this industry as a career, tend to probably have a very similar story. They had some sort of crisis, or someone they know or a family member was stricken down to some major illness of some sort, and they had to sort of take it upon themselves. And I think nowadays, with the information with the internet and Facebook, and that information is much more easily gathered, whereas back in our day, we had to hit the textbooks to try and find the answers, type of thing. But it was a real leap of faith, I think, in the end, when I was starting to heal. And I started to think, well, there's really something in this stuff. This is not just placebo stuff. There's something really healing and medicinal about this natural stuff. So it was a leap of faith. So I sort of ditched more of the orthodox medical career and sort of went into more of the natural medicine side of it. And that was, somewhat some 30 years ago. And as a naturopath student, my very first patient I ever had was for actually infertility. Now, infertility wasn't something I ever thought I'd be specialising in. That was, I was more into the sports medicine stuff and all that sort of gear, looking after athletes. But I suddenly had some, what was at the time quite, I guess they were considered quite complicated cases. A lot of these ladies were very, in their late 40s and had multiple goes in IVF and sadly no success. But I think, like anything, our job is that we want to help people. So we just deconstructed this to the essentials. And I think that's where natural medicine differs, obviously, with orthodox medicine, is that we tend to be little detectives and try and sort of, reverse engineer the problem and get right down to the origin and cause and see by giving the body the right nourishment to fix that organ system or that cellular system that seems to be working irregularly or is at disease, then the ripple effect from that basically fans out and hopefully the body will self-heal and self-correct itself. So we're just giving it the tools to look after itself, essentially. And I found the philosophy of that and the methodology seemed to sit with me more than what was happening in the realm of orthodox medicine at that time. So, but long story short, yes, I sort of started to see a lot of these cases that weren't, cases not the right word, but a lot of people that weren't really having great success. And somehow we fell on a very good combination of protocol. And now, nearly 30 years or so later, we passed our 9,000th baby last year. So,
wow, that is fantastic. Yeah. Congratulations.
That's really cool. I think when you start, we're actually now seeing the original babies now coming back in that are wanting to seek advice to get prepped to have kids themselves. So they're well into their late 20s now. So I actually last week and the week before, I saw a couple of them and I'm thinking, wow, I'm getting old. it's all going full circle. But it's pretty cool because I think the one thing I've really observed with this, and it's good, I have to say the word, sort of sitting on the sidelines a bit and seeing what's happening in the world of natural medicine over the years and, and what's happening in orthodox medicine, because I tend to see the good in both. And I think, like anything, if we can marry the best of both worlds together, then hopefully we're going to have a greater success. And you can see a lot of success with a lot of these new functional medicine doctors and clinics that are really sort of not just seeing people as mechanical, a bag of illnesses of some sort of symptoms. There's actually a lot of, things going on. We have emotions, so... And the root of that, which is your area of specialty, Linda particularly, yes, is getting in sort of that side of things, is, again, at any really disease state, the origin, there is some emotional connection that's really sort of started all this in motion, basically, or emotion, and basically that's why people start developing, chronic illnesses.
Absolutely, yeah. And so, it's actually great that... more doctors are really going much deeper into that, especially the functional medicine side. Yes. More so the younger, maybe 30s or 40s.
I see that definitely. I guess I've had a lot of connection with a lot of top doctors, and I did quite a lot of years of talkback radio. In the past, probably 14, 50 years of talkback radio. So I was very lucky to have the, honour to have conversations with a lot of top therapists. Don't want to name drop, but you know a few of the people I've seen. And probably because of that, I was sort of also seeing a lot of, well-known, socialites and celebrities and top-level athletes, particularly... world champions, Olympic champions, in their respective sport, and still doing that a bit today. Mm-hmm. Actually, one of the guys just beat Roger Federer in tennis recently, so that was really cool.
Wow.
Yeah, that was really groovy. And actually, the irony, I shouldn't mention names, but I helped his sisters both out with babies indirectly. So that was really groovy too. So, awesome. But yeah, no, it's a wonderful thing. I mean, when you've been in this industry, I think when you can see the true impact of changing people's lives, you know, not just band-aiding symptoms and things like that, but you know, hopefully, you know, changing the whole course of their life in some way, increasing their future well-being, you know, really trying to stack the odds in their favour to try and minimise the potential risk of developing more chronic illnesses in the future.
Exactly. So in your years of practice, what are you seeing more commonly of people coming in? What problems are people coming to you with now?
Well, always the top two, that's always been the case, and you would probably see this yourself, Linda, is obviously fatigue, number one, and not adapting to stress would always be probably at the top two areas. I mean, who couldn't do with more energy? I don't have too many people coming in. I've got far too much energy. I want to just pass it on to someone else. And the same, you know, the world's changing so quickly. And it's not just emotional stress. You know, like you say, there's about 80,000 new biochemical agents used commercially. And you see a lot, particularly after Vietnam, particularly in the States, you know, from the 1970s onwards. And that was a great impact with fertility, particularly, just digressing onto that point. You know, that was one of the highest peak fertile times in Western affluent cultures. But there's been such a massive decline since then. And, you know, we're producing half the babies that we did, say, 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. So, which is really scary in a lot of countries, because basically the as of next year, the aging population, there will be more 65 plus year olds on the planet, first time in history, than there are children under the age of 5. So this is why the burden on our healthcare system is just mounting. You know, retirement ages have been pushing later and later because governments are spending our money on stuff. And so yeah, there's a lot of things going on. But this is the problem. Even though life expectancies through medications might be sort of sustaining or in some cases extending lifespan, but our health span is not improving. And that is the big problem. There's this massive gap now where, you know, we've got a whole generation of children now coming through that where the incidence of conditions, say like autism, is just exponentially rising at a massive rate. Alzheimer's, dementia, you know, okay, you might live a long time, but will you even remember it, you know, near the end? It's almost like your brain is de-evolving.
So, Jason, in your opinion, autism, which is one of the growing conditions, especially for young kids, what is the cause of that?
Well, that's a much great debate. And actually, the last radio show I ever did for a particular radio station, they called me up and they wanted to speak on vaccinations. And at that time, it was very venomous about this pro-vax business and all this. And ever since then, a lot of information has come to light. You know, there's pioneers like Del Bigtree, who used to produce the Doctor series in the state, and he did the Truth About Cancer series and vaxxed. People should really, you know, I'd recommend them just looking at it. I don't want to sort of push opinion. Just look at, you know, present the information and then you make up your own choices, you know. But we have two, I have a few kids, and particularly the last two, the second youngest one is in his early 20s now. He had his MMR needle around the, I think it was the year and a half mark, I think. And literally within minutes, you could see the physical change. I mean, he was like this 1 minute, and by the afternoon, he was basically like, we need an exorcism almost performed. There was just something that dramatically changed. And a younger boy, similar. So I think at that time, there was, I don't know if it was a bad batch of vaccines that were doing the rounds. I think there's a lot of causes, I think, but I think something like that is a catalyst that basically will set things in motion. So some people might have a genetic history. I look at my family and I think, you know, yeah, we're all got a little bit of autism, I think, somewhere. But I think this basically just brings out the gene expression So it's not the vaccines as such. I think it's more the adjuvants that they use in vaccines, for example, like the mercuries, and, you know, they're even talking about using aborted embryo fetus cells and all these other things. Even the detergents that they clean the equipment with,
So these are heavy metals that they actually add to the vaccinations.
That's correct, yes. And there's quite a lot. And this is the thing, even the world's top experts that deep dived into trying to research the sort of unvalidate, vaccines' major contributing factor to a lot of these potential conditions. And we're not just talking about that. You got the flu vaccines and Bolsodin, which they're giving the girls to help with HPV virus. There's a lot of new science that's now coming to light. And I hate to say, there's a lot of political agendas going on behind the scenes. And a lot of this sort of goes back particularly around the mid-80s, with the Congress and the states, we're almost being held hostage, about germ warfare and all that was going on. And a lot of these chemicals, too, post-wars are being repurposed, like glycinates, companies like what was Monsanto, now Bayer. And a lot of this genetic engineering of our food sources now. If you look at, all these people, the incidence of asthma has grown at such an exponential rate in recent years, especially with young children. But these chronic inflammatory gut disorders, this is where a lot of this is devolving back to. So if you've got an inflamed gut, the chances are you've got an inflamed brain. And this is where you've got these young children that are developing. And it basically increases their permeability. So benign bits of food matter, again, genetically modified substances that have been spliced into different food groups, the rise of refined sugars being used in our diets now. So basically since the 1950s particularly, the last 70 odd years has basically been hijacked by agribusiness and big pharma, basically, and it's this massive toxic overload cooling effect that everyone on the planet now is exposed to that previous generations didn't have.
Can you talk more about the gut-brain connection and yes. how that affects our overall health? Because there's yes. more and more viruses and autoimmune and other illnesses and diseases that are becoming more and more popular. And a lot of people, they're undiagnosed. You mentioned fatigue is one of the biggest things that people come to you. So exactly. when they go to different doctors, it's like, they're either, here, take a sleeping pill, or here, you're depressed, or here.
You're depressed. Or, funny you just mentioned that. I've had a few clients in today, and basically, I hate to say that, but it seems to be an automatic default. When we don't truly know what the origin of the condition is, or we really don't have a pharmaceutical equivalent medication that's sort of much good at dealing with that, you must be depressed. So we've got to give you something. Eventually you numb people out to it. And this is the big area. There's so many, the new slang is using, the microbiome. We used to call it just gut flora back in the day, but this is the big thing. I mean, we're learning day by day so much new information about really how our universe is really working, and basically, how the microorganisms that basically sustain us, and just in our digestive system alone is, nearly 100 times more bacteria than we actually have of human cells. So we're really essentially a bag of skin with eyeballs carrying around bacteria. So, and this is the big thing. So again, like with these GMO foods, particularly when they were introduced, and there's other things like BT toxins, which is like the herbicides and pesticides that they use now. BT toxins basically work. So if an animal tries to ingest it, a bug tries to ingest it, basically it causes their guts to basically implode. It punches holes through their gut lining and basically they die. Well, we're consuming this at an uncontrolled or unmonitored sort of a percentage. And surprise, surprise, all of a sudden, we've got this massive increase in rise of inflammatory gut disorders, ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, irritable bowel syndrome, celiac disease. Celiac's a classic. I mean, until they started, I don't want to use the word bastardised, but pretty much that's what the agribusiness has done. They've gone in and basically, you know, hybrided a lot of the old original ancient grains and basically made these hybrid versions. So obviously, they're trying to sustain, you know, the planet's food supply. You know, that's, but there's holes in that theory. So basically, again, we've been ingesting this over several generations now. And this is the thing, epigenetics, this is obviously the new area that we're focused on, that how we can influence our genes and our chromosomes through our environment, be it through the things we ingest, we breathe, our exercise, our mental emotional state, our spiritual beliefs, all these sort of things have such a cumulative knock-on effect. And the digestive system really is the key to it. I mean, when you really consider, even go back to days like Hippocrates saying, you know, let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food, they knew. They had a great innate wisdom back in those days. You look at cultures like in traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, they've been at this for hundreds of thousands of years. Here in Australia, you know, we have the native Australians, they've been around since the dawn of time. I mean, the wisdom that they've accumulated over the years is something that we really should stand up and take more notice of. The digestion is really like anything. We need things that will improve the integrity and re-knitting, I guess, in a sense, the microbiome, well, the gut lining. So this is not the problem. We're ingesting these foods. They're designed to basically slip through the mucosal membrane, and they're basically causing havoc at a microcellular level and interfering with what they call immunoglobulins and that. So your body's increasing blood viscosity, and it basically it all comes down to inflammation. So basically, you're causing this inflammatory response. The gut membrane loses its integrity. It swells. So anytime you eat a bit of food, benign food matter in the future, your body's geared up to protect itself. You think, oh, this could be an infection, but I'm not sure what it is. So I'll just attack it anyway. So, and that's just like bringing out the heavy artillery. Then you're just causing more damage.
Yeah.
And people are put on like antacid medications because everyone's suffering reflux and heartburn. Worst thing you could do. You know, I suffered that for years myself, and I learned the hard way to how to go around and fix it.
Jason, how do you heal the gut lining, especially if, you know, we live in the same environment and society and, you know, we're changing our diet, but what are some things that you recommend that we can heal our gut lining to restore our health and our bodies back to homeostasis, back into balance and to absorbing our nutrients from our food so it all comes back to the gut?
You put it right on the head, Linda. I think like we can sort of, you can sort of directly link this to almost any chronic disease, you know, anything from autoimmunity, which we can get into if we talk about whatever you like. But obviously, yeah, when it comes down is defaulting back to proper food choices. Obviously, most people, if you can have the means, try and shop more locally, foods in your local environment. You want soil-derived foods too, because you want to get soil-derived probiotics too, to help sort of, again, it's a bit like there's a bit of a like a war going on in the gut between good and evil. Essentially, it's like the empire, you know, is fighting, and I think it's a bit like what we want to essentially do is just sort of try and swing a few of the bad guys over onto our good side and sort of try and control at least 51% of the gut, and then hopefully then we can sort of take over more control. A lot of the natural medicine, so we can touch on a few of the nutrients and herbs and things like that. So a lot of things initially what you want to do is heal and soothe and protect the mucosal membrane of the gut. So a lot of the fermented foods are always one of your sort of first line of protocols. Some people that really have a lot of what they call dysbiosis, so they have a lot of probably a real microorganism balance in the digestive system, probably shouldn't jump into that if they've never really done that before too quickly, because you can end up getting really bloated and windy until your body adapts to that situation. So think so. Nutrient wise, you want to put on the top of your list if you're out shopping. There's an amino acid that's very important for the gut lining called L-glutamine. It's very important for fueling the integrity of the gut lining. A lot of people are nowadays are sort of very much into the bone broth. So if you're not vegetarian or vegan, and you know want to step it up to something a little more help with regenerative powers, the things like the collagen or bone broths would be definitely worth considering. They have so many great health benefits, packed full of proteins and things like proline. So they're not just good for your gut lining, they're really good for all connective tissue regeneration in the body. A lot of the sort of good herbs that you use to sort of help heal the gut, marshmallow root is really good. A lot of people forget about marshmallow root. It's very high in a substance called melanin. It's really good. Actually, there's a really good women's herb called peonia that's high in that as well. Things like your really soothing plants, like aloe vera. Aloe vera is very high in your essential sugars. I think mannan, I think, might be one of the main ones in that. I mean, a lot of people think of aloe vera when you get a sunburn and whack it on your skin. Well, it's essentially doing the same thing inside. So it's very soothing and healing. So people that have maybe like a peptic ulcer or again, are suffering heartburn and reflux, something that might have soothed and coat the esophagus. Mm-hmm. Probably when you take a tablet for that, it basically shoots right past the place that you want to work on. So things like, once you've sort of soothed and healed the gut, you know, that's just a couple of things. Then you want to sort of bring in the good probiotics to reestablish that. And rather than going with mega, mega high doses of probiotics, it's more important to find a really good product that has, like I said, the soil-based ones are really great. But ones that have a lot of research and scientific studies behind them to support them. A lot of the lactobacilli strains and the bifida strains. There's ones called rutii is showing some incredible therapeutic effects in so many different areas. Rhamnosus is another species that comes to mind that are really, really good. So rather than trying to just take a lot of individual probiotics, it's a bit like trying to throw like a handful of grass seeds onto a massive lawn. You know, it's a little bit of a futile effect. The more important thing, if you want to improve the integrity, these, just like those couple of those those probiotics that I was just mentioning, They're a bit like the generals. And basically, if you can introduce more of them, they will then basically coordinate to the, I guess, the soldiers, the next tier down, and basically how to function.
So interesting. Where do people get these probiotics, Jason? Like, are they readily available?
Yeah, I mean, probiotics are really highly sourced. But obviously, you know, you want to probably talk to
the good quality ones.
Good quality ones, you know, we can mention names, but I don't know if we can do that. But from a food point of view, you really want to try and get it through your food, first of all. That's like with supplements, they're there to supplement what may be deficient in your diet. So you can get like your kefirs, like coconut kefir is really good. Beetroot kefirs are fantastic. Beetroots, just out of interest, are very high in a substance called trimethylglycine. Absolutely brilliant anti-aging stuff. Glycine is also very, very important for the integrity of the gut lining. Very important for brain health, glycine. But trimethylglycine is what they call a methyl donor. So this is having a real protective effect, a bit like antioxidants type of thing. But trimethylglycine is really good. And this also helps to increase a substance called nitric oxide in the body. This is what a lot of people that want energy, it helps to dilate and constrict your blood vessels better. So anything that will help deliver oxygen to your cells more efficiently, well, that's going to be just great for everything. You're going to have more energy, especially to the brain. So again, protecting from Alzheimer's and dementia. And this is a big part of it, like we were sort of touching on earlier. When you've got inflammation in the gut, you're going to have inflammation in the brain. You have this blood-brain barrier that basically protects us, you know, from a lot of nasty microorganisms that shouldn't really be there. One of the big reasons why people sort of progress into things like early dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and these type of conditions is that you can get like nanobacteria, microscopic bacteria that sort of get into places where they're not really meant to be. So the body, in its defensive mechanism, sort of encapsulates it like a crust. And we call it biofilm. Very similar, and this is what happens in the gut with dysbiosis. People can get conditions like Heliobacter, which is a nasty sort of corkscrew bacteria that tends to get into the stomach. One of the things, one of the things as we get older is our digestive enzymes essentially slow. This is one of the major reasons why or how we start to physiologically age. So if we can sort of keep topping up the integrity of how our digestive enzymes, so say for example, like your mouth makes amylase and that helps start digesting proteins, carbohydrates. But when you get into the stomach, you have hydrochloric acid, which should be at a very low pH level. pH is a marker of acidity. So it's very acidic. You could burn through almost anything. So that's why we need a very good integrity to the gut lining to begin with. And the gut produces other things like pepsin and pepsinogen, and also this stuff called mucin, which is a bit like mucus. So I don't know, has anyone ever tried slippery elm powder?
Yes, at all? I used to like make the powder and with some warm water and add honey.
That's a brilliant idea. See, people forget about it. It's cheap too. It's really cheap. I'm not a real fan of psyllium husks so much. The psyllium husks, if you look under a microscope, they're like a bit of barbed wire and they can sort of rip through the gut. So a lot of people are on certain products, especially one that starts with an M. It can sort of grate its way through the gut lining and in itself may also be contributing to inflammation. So where there's inflammation, this is sort of what basically sets things in motion. I hate to use the big C word, but the cancer word, but if you look where, say for example, someone was sort of given the diagnosis, okay, they had cancer, now it's in remission. And one day they sort of drop a big hammer on your toe. And guess what? Guess where the cancer's wanting to head to that site of inflammation again. So we don't want to wrap your body in cotton wool. You've got to live in the real world. But we need things that will sort of keep inflammation regulated in certain parts of the body. And sadly, a lot of the pharmaceuticals are not really that selective. You know, they tend to block inflammation everywhere, where you only really wanted it sort of quenched for a short amount of time in a certain part of your body. And that's where some of the herbals are very, very beneficial. Most people know of spices like turmeric, and the active ingredient that is curcumin, or one of the active ingredients, I should say. So there's a lot of science and research, you know, for many, many decades. There's absolutely warehouses full of research now that are supporting how useful these are. And again, protecting that blood-brain barrier to help prevent, these microorganisms getting in there. And basically, really, what happens to most of us in the end is that we develop calcification. So that's what happens when you have these microbacteria. They'll start to cluster, biofilm will start to form around it. And in a way, it sort of cloaks itself from your body's immune system. So your body just thinks it's part of the furniture. So it sort of sits there and sort of festers away over months, years. And then one day, like you say, if it's in a particular part of the brain, it's taking up space. And then it's anything that could be hindering the optimal function of that sort of that part of it, or those cells, or that part of the body.
Jason, you mentioned bone broth. I've seen that in powdered form that you can actually buy straight off the shelf. And do you recommend that, or do you recommend going to a butcher and buying actual, you know, beef bones or chicken carcass and making up your own broth?
Number two, just as you mentioned, Linda, yeah, definitely always try and go to the source too, because you know exactly where you're sort of getting from. So you've got find a really good organic butcher locally to yourself. And like I say, you could probably pick it up a lot cheaper as well. I mean, there's a bit of preparation time, but when you look back in history too, I mean, this made a huge part of most people's diets around the world. You know, it's very, in a lot of traditional Chinese medicine, you know, chicken feet and all these sort of things, oxtails, all these sort of things. But it's sort of the part of the animal we actually discard, you know. So, I like to try and, have a reasonable sort of amount of vegetarian diet, but in certain cases, if you're a really, really strict vegetarian, for example, there are certain nutrients that you could be missing out of, like, you know, your B12s and taurine and things like, which is amino acid, by the way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, absolutely brilliant. And girls, boys, if you want to help keep your skin young and you know, it's almost saves you money on getting a facelift done if you can get stuck into your into these broths and things like that. And a lot of people, again, like I said, you can. It's almost like a form of alchemy. You know, you throw in all the really high quality fruit and vegetables, so you're making a real, like, you know, a stock or a stew from it.
Yeah, and all your fresh ginger and all your herbs. And actually, it reminds me, you know, this acupuncturist that I've seen, and she gave me a bag of, you know, a packet of herbs, and basically it's, you know, looks like, you know, a bit of bark off a tree. You know, dried leaves, and you know, and you throw it all in a saucepan and you boil it up, you know, like this big soup.
You do that with the Chinese medicine, the traditional Chinese medicine, the way they prepare. You go in there and it looks like it's something they scratch off the rope and then put it in a pile. And you're going to cook that up, and I work in Asia for a short amount of time, we're working in some of these health food shops, and you know, very traditional. Some of them have been, you know, established for centuries. And, of course, right in the reek of summer, the smell, you know, you just want to go outside and dry reach. It was that off. But look, you know, there's some fantastic stuff. But exactly like what you mentioned, having that cocktail, like I said, a lot of people got to build up to it. You know, you want to try and keep it as, you know, not as fancy in the beginning. And depending on, again, where you can gauge yourself within your health sort of spectrum of things. You know, if you are recovering from a very, very chronic illness, you know, you've got to, it's sort of softly, softly catching monkey approach. But something like that could be really good. Again, if you're not adverse to using animal products medicinally, it's definitely something everyone should consider. Again, it's absolutely brilliant. It's the glue that basically holds our body together. If not, we'd be like a jellyfish, I think, you know, just lying around. So yeah, definitely. I think people could go out, do that first. Again, for the sake of convenience, as we are nowadays, you know, there's some very, very good products. You know, there's a lot of, again, try and really find the source, because I said there's a lot of like marine peptide collagen products around, which are brilliant, you know, for beauty and things like that. There's different types of strains of collagen. There's type 1, type 2, type 3, and they do slightly different things. And again, they're very high in things like glucosamine, chondroitin. MSM is really good. MSM is a form of organic sulfur. A lot of people forget about it because it smells like, something rotting. You know, this, you know, but it is absolutely brilliant stuff for helping.
So that comes in powdered form or in tablet form?
You can get it either in both,
So mix it in with your smoothies, or mix it in with a sports drink, or
that's what I would do. Especially for you don't have to be an athlete; you could be a weekend warrior or not. If you suffer arthritis, it's definitely one of those substances you can think of, because it helps to make another substance called SAMI, which is very important to help with regulating mood and behaviour as well. One of those ingredients I was talking about earlier, called trimethylglycine, is sort of in that group of methylated. So which is a big fancy word. It just helps your body detoxify better. Very important for ladies, you know, prepping to have babies as well. That's why they talk about, you know, the importance of folate, not folic acid. Folic acid is old synthetic stuff. If you're getting a new pregnancy multi, definitely look for something with the new generation folates, like 5-MTHFR is one of the, I was going to say another word then, but it's really, really high quality, because it helps bypass genetic issues where your body may not be metabolizing it. B12 is also very important. As we get older too, B12 is one of those nutrients that their body doesn't assimilate too well. So a lot of your grandparents or that are probably off getting vitamin D injections all the time. Zinc is also very important too, for so many different chemical reactions in the body. I mean, on its own, it regulates at least 300, but even combined with a little bit of magnesium and B6 regulates about 3,000 different enzymes. So very, very important for how your endocrine system works. And this is the thing, you want to find stuff that helps support one system of the body, but then has its knock-on effect and works complementary with other systems at the same time. So like I said, you could take so many different supplements and herbs and that, but if you can keep it to the essentials, it can really help get some good momentum.
Right, and this is all going back to heal our gut flora to reduce the inflammation, increase the integrity of our gut lining. So it goes back to what are we putting in our bodies, and also reducing the toxins. So this would mean eating organic fruit and vegetables, you know, going to your local markets, buying organic as much as possible. But if someone has, or that most people don't know that they've got heavy metals, how would they be tested for that? And what can they do to remove the heavy metals from their body?
Well, there's definitely a few things, and that's one of the big areas nowadays. And I see it a lot, like, we'll have to default back to the fertility lot, but with the couples that we see particularly, most of the male partners are usually probably involved in trading, like trading industries, a lot of builders, sparkies, plumbers, a lot of guys working out on the mine. So these guys are around this stuff all the time, even though probably more so than us. But you know, particularly people living in the city, just the exhaust fumes, all the cadmium and all that sort of stuff just coming out. The amalgam fillings we had when we were younger, you know, they're still in there. And they start to, when the cavities start to sort of fall apart, they start to vaporize, and that's when it becomes particularly toxic. One of the simplest tests you can do is a hair tissue mineral test. This is something we used to do quite a lot. And it can be very accurate too, because when you get blood pathology, it's really showing you what's going on in the extracellular fluid at that particular moment. Where a hair tissue mineral test, they test the micronutrients as well. So it's more of a timeline. It's like when you ring, but you know, chop a tree in half and you look at the growth rings. Gives you a bit of an idea what's been happening over a period of time inside the cell. So you can extrapolate a lot of information from that. And there's some great labs around the world that basically, you know, they will even provide like a profile of information from that test to give you information or trends of, you know, their findings and give you an idea what potentially might have happened to cause to why this is happening and give you some self-help ideas how you might be able to rectify that. So, yeah, and this is where we were sort of just touching before about the methylation stuff. So there's a lot of things, you know, everyone should try and always get a certain degree of dark green leafy veggies in their diet, and preferably, particularly ones like broccoli. Broccoli are very high in substance like indole-3 carbinols, which are very important for both sexes to help detoxify bad hormones. So this also, again, defaults a bit back to the fertility thing. But it really helps to protect by clearing out the bad. It allows room for the good to come in and take its place. We just lost connection there. So basically, with these hair tissue tests, when they come back, they'll give you a sort of a scale reading potentially of, you know, what potential heavy metals may be out of ratio and what other important. So trace minerals also could be out of sync to one another. So you can also possibly supplement that through, you know, products that might be designed, because that's one of the single biggest problems that we have is that we are so mineral deficient nowadays.
Yes.
And we were just actually talking the other day, and I mentioned the name of a particular detoxification product called C60. Which is a very special form of carbon, a bit of a cousin to the activated charcoals. A lot of people, you can, you know, use those. Some of the greatest longevity studies ever done were performed using, say, the C60 substance. And the animals were essentially almost living twice as long. So they almost had to put a stop to that test because on paper, there's nothing that sort of has matched it as of yet. So when you think about it, it's working like an extra filter to the body. So anything, I mean, if you look at like your water filters, and that's another very important area that everyone tends to overlook, you know, the stuff from your tap is crap, basically. You really want to get a good oil filtration system
Is that like an alkaline filtration?
Yeah, the alkaline systems definitely have a lot of their benefit. One of the big areas is something that can increase negatively charged hydrogen molecules within the cell. This is really important. Hydrogen is basically the building block of the universe. And it is the most important antioxidant in the body. There's some, if I had to name drop a couple of products, there's a brilliant fellow called Patrick Flanagan, is a child genius. And he's got a product out called Mega Hydrate. People should really have a look, Google it. Great information, but this stuff is very, very important for really increasing the antioxidant. Because hydrogen is the smallest molecule, so it can slip in and out of the cells very easy. So it can go anywhere in the body that it's needed to work. Problem with antioxidants, traditional antioxidants, like say vitamin C molecule, is quite a large, clunky molecule. And it doesn't easily get into the cells. And sometimes what happens when it gives off an electron, for example, it actually can become an oxidant itself and actually can cause problems. But something like stabilizing it with something like a negatively charged hydrogen, and you can even make this stuff yourself. You can get little magnesium pellets and things like that you can get online. It's a bit of mucking around. You've got to prepare the water under pressure type of thing. But, you know, products like that are really, really good. But, yes, as you mentioned, Linda, because our cells work at a certain resonance. I mean, our pH level in the blood ranges between, I think, 7.35 to 7.45. So it's a very, very tight area that we can only maneuver in. Like I said, if you're out eating, you know, takeaway every day, all day, you're going to look for troubles. You're going to be increasing your over-acidity in the body. And the knock-on effect, you can end up developing conditions like metabolic syndrome and things like that, you know, over time. So what about
adding lemon or lime to water? Does that change the molecular structure of the water, and does that help to kill off some of these chemicals or remove some of the chlorine or the fluoride or whatever is in the water?
Actually, and that's a really good topic we can talk on to next about the thyroid. But yes, that's exactly what a lot of people, really in the morning, if you can, again, always if you can, try and source organic lemons and limes. They're both fantastic. I mean, not everyone, you know, can find that easily. But again, it all depends on how important you place on your health. You know, for the sake of some things that cost a few extra cents now, could probably save you thousands of dollars in the future. But one of the main things, say, let's say lemon, for example, is very low pH, almost very equivalent to that of the hydrochloric acid that's in your stomach. It's a very unique food. Basically, it's when you ingest it, it's acidic, but in the tissues, because of the residue ash that it leaves over, I don't know if people have heard of the citric acid cycle or the Krebs cycle. This is basically how your cells make energy. Well, the residues left over, like citric acid from the citrus fruits, are very important for controlling the energy system. You could even get probably a lemon and plug your smartphone into it, and you could probably charge it with the energy. It's okay. Go ahead and try it. I think we did that for the chemistry back in school one day. So really, when you think of it, our body is electrical. And yes, doing that first thing in the morning, and see, one of the best things, it is fantastically good for your bile flow. So again, it's sort of cleaning shop a little bit by helping that flow of bile. And bile's really important for particularly the emulsification of fats. And people, you know, there's a huge incidence of gallstones and kidney stones, which again is all calcification. And the bile salts and your pancreatic enzyme salts don't mix properly. And one of the byproducts that, again, there's fermentation that goes on when the gut bacteria is out of balance. This then produces lactic acid. I mean, you might know of lactic acid, you know, when people are exercising and they get sore muscles too quickly, lactic acid. So what happens when people are taking like antacid medications, you know, proton pump inhibitors and things, because they've got heartburn and reflux, and they think, well, it gives them a bit of relief for a couple of hours. But the problem is that you end up blocking the absorption of a lot of other vitamin minerals in your digestive system by doing it that way. and that will slow the gut emptying time. So this really throws the whole timing out of your digestive system. So by the time foods get down into your small intestine, the food particles really haven't been broken down properly. And the consequence that then the pancreas then has to work harder to try and compensate for that. And the gut, the small intestine is an alkaline environment. Your pancreas produces enzymes like pancreatin and bicarbonate, which also your kidneys produce. So that one of the jobs of bicarbonate is to control that acid alkaline balance. And that's another thing to achieve remedy. They always say the word remedy is probably a bit strong, but it's something people can look into when if they might be suffering certain cancers, for example, bicarbonate. But then again, foods get down to the large intestine, then it's putting a lot more strain on the liver gall. And you're seeing so many people at even very young age having gallbladders removed when they possibly could have been remedied earlier.
And I mean, it used to just be talked about that from highly fatty foods, you know, deep fried food, a lot of takeaway food, all that deep fried stuff, that's what caused gallstones. But there's a lot more to it, isn't there?
Well, a lot more to it. I think that was one of the things, I guess, put out by certain businesses back in the day about how evil fat is and carbohydrates are good. And that sort of changed the whole evolution of how humans have been eating for the last 70-odd years. Mm. And it'd be nice to have a time machine and go back and change history. There was a fellow called, I think, Anker Keys, I think. He had a lot to do with it back then. But there's a lot of it too, it's the right fats. You know, there's certain trans fatty acids, you know, from cooking, you know, like for with canola oils and a lot of those rancid fats. Whereas things like coconut oil, I mean, there's been a lot of propaganda and against coconut oil in recent times because, oh, it's a saturated fat, it's evil. You know, stay away from it. And, you know, some of the largest, strongest animals in the world consume it daily. I mean, look at the islanders. There's some big units there. So, you know, it's so good. I think that's the thing. Now we've got science to start validating a lot of these traditional foods and traditional medicines that have sort of been a little bit suppressed over time. It's starting to bring things to light more that, it just like anything, if you can just try and eat stuff that was made, you know, by nature rather than stuff that was made in a factory, you can't go too wrong most of the time.
The example of that is eating real butter from, you know, real cream opposed to margarine, which is, pretty much a chemical.
It is actually interesting fact on margarine is that it's actually one molecule away from being plastic. Can you imagine that? So we've been eating this all these years. And that's just a scary thought, isn't it? But and that's the other thing because we've all been taught, low fat milk, low fat everything, you know.
Yeah, all the low fat yogurts are just loaded with sugar.
You think, low fat, what are they replacing it with? That's the evil. Really, it's the refined sugar, really. When you get down to the nitty-gritty of it, if there's one thing that we could all really minimise in our diet is just cut as much of the refined sugar. And that's what's so scary about the refined food industries, the amount of hidden sugar that they put in a lot of their burgers and drinks, the soft drinks. I mean, certain cola and drinks is absolutely staggering, the amount of sugar in that. I mean, it's amazing we don't go into a diabetic coma when we think about what we are consuming, you know, on a daily accumulative basis over time. Again, the incidence of cardiovascular disease, obesity is absolutely rampant nowadays. People would just, you know, if you went back 100 years, people would just fall over laughing, think, I'd pay money to go to a gymnasium and put on some leotards and run on a machine for my health. And you think, that's just ludicrous, you know. That's just what we used to do just on a day-to-day life, you know. And it's also fancy now, about eating organic. Well, you know, 50 years ago, that was just for food. It's just sort of, there's a lot of fad stuff out there and it's very hard to sort of sift through nowadays, you know, because there's so much marketing now connecting to it as well. And it's a sad thing to see. But like I said, you just want to default back to the essential foods. You know, a lot of dark green leafies, you know, the cruciferous foods are always good. You know, your broccoli, Brussels sprouts, spinach, kale, you know, arugula is really good. A lot of those sort of foods, you know, keep the fruits minimal because you're also getting fructose in there as well. But again, you know, you got a lot of your super herbs and super foods now. You know, acai is very popular and things like that. But, you know, your blueberries, if you can get high quality wild blueberries, absolutely fantastic, brilliant for your stem cells. Things like spirulina and chlorella, some of the oldest living algae species on the planet. They were here near the beginning. And there's some very mystical stories about some of those plants as well, going right back to biblical times. And you know, this super, super dense and high quality nutrients. Again, food for your entire body, essentially. I mean, you can really whittle down to probably your top 10, top 20 superfoods, super herbs. You know, the whole secret is rotation too. You know, it's all well to say, yeah, just take that. But you shouldn't just stay on the same thing forever and ever, ever. It's like what's happened with Western diet. You get your three meat and your piece of meat and three veggies, and we've been eating that way, you know, for a few generations now. But actually, it's an interesting point we were making up the other day. Since electricity sort of come around with Thomas Edison throwing on the switches with the first commercial generators and that back at the end of the 1800s, you know, for nearly the entire human evolution, we basically, since we discovered fire, and up until that time, probably into the early 1900s, we basically all cooked with wood and fire. That was it. And basically the wood, basically when it was breaking down, it basically what's left over is, I guess you call it wood ash, which is essentially just plant minerals. So, you know, you don't want to leave a big pile of mess. So what they do is scoop it up and go throw it on their garden. Mm. And wow. And it's really high in substances like ormus. Ormus is just magical stuff as well. Just, you know, super, super micronutrients that we just don't get in our foods anymore. And it's almost prehistoric, you know, the quality of this soil that they're getting. So they're just growing super, super quality food. And it's really interesting when you look back at the early 1800s in the US alone, nearly 87% of all people were classed as farmers. Today it's down to 2%.
Wow.
So it's a massive shift, you know, for what we used to do. So
that's huge. Jason, you've mentioned so many different subjects that we could go much deeper on.
And
we've kind of just given a full spectrum, you know, a big smorgasbord of all these different topics that for future videos we can actually just, you know, drill down deeper.
Yes. Set a topic and to really deep dive into that a lot more thoroughly rather than
That would be
a gun approach there. So
awesome. But before we wrap up, how do people get hold of you for a consultation, and what's the best way to contact you?
Okay, well, my clinic now is on the Sunshine Coast in Queensland, Australia. We're in a suburb called Bedina at the moment. So the clinic's called Jackson Health Naturopathic Clinic. Our website, probably easier to log on there and have a bit of a peruse. The three W's, jacksonhealth.com.au, an Australian address. The clinic phone number, if anyone wanted to give us a call, 07 for Australia, 54777115 is our clinic. So 54777115. So log on to that. Like they say, drop us an email. You know, we can work on, do a Skype consult. I'm very lucky over the years, especially with the fertility, but not just exclusive to fertility. Everyone thought I'm the fertility guy, but I pretty much deal with everything. And there's a lot of, clients we have from all over the world. So we can, you know, organize Skype appointments or phone consultations. And like I say, we can get really into the history of what your health history has been like to get an idea of why you are, or why things have gone a bit bonkers, why things are playing up today. So that helps, gives us a lot of ideas where things may be trending in the future. So I think if we can sort of, again, investigate that, it's like being a bit like Sherlock Holmes a bit, and sort of trying to unravel, you know, and sort of make sure that we really essentially got all our bases. You know, I think that's why we've done so well in the fertility, you know, rather than sort of jump over too many hurdles. I'm very meticulous, sort of just making sure we got all the boxes ticked and we get the absolute essentials right from the get-go. It's like anything. If you're building a house, you need a solid platform to work from. And hopefully once you get that right, everything you do thereafter should be pretty good. But we never even got to touch on thyroid or autoimmune or any of those.
Well, that's one of the subjects for next time. You know, there's chronic fatigue, there's chronic pain, allergies, food intolerances, the parasites, you know, bacterial infections or Lyme's disease, then toxicity, mold, you know, your heavy metal toxicity we only touched on today, but that then leads into autoimmunity with your gastrointestinal issues and hormone imbalances. So there's many subjects that we will take a deep dive into.
We might have to start on longevity, Linda, between you and me. So we can still be around to finish off that list of the conditions that we're going to get through. So we better start taking our own advice, eh? So, no, like I said, there's more than one way to skin a cat. There are so many tricks, you know, we have. And like I said, it's been such a privilege working in this industry. I think, like I said, you know, when you see it from different sides of the fence, and you know yourself, Linda, you know, you've been around the world. You got to interview Dr. Phil. How groovy is that? But it's so rewarding to see where you can sort of hopefully make changes in people's lives for the better. And like I say, it's changed the future. I mean, me with the fertility particularly, you're changing not just that person's life, but their whole family and maybe the course of the future. Hopefully one of these kids will be a better president than the one getting around right now. And you could be a world changer. Who knows? You know. So
exactly.
We need these kids for the future because our super is dropping at a great rate. So we need a few future taxpayers to keep us up. So yeah, like I said, it's an endless abyss of possibilities, isn't it?
Well, thank you so much, Jason, for sharing your wealth of knowledge today. Really appreciate it. And we will be back soon with much more. So thank you.
Really appreciate it. I hope everyone might have got a couple of nuggets out of that just today. But hopefully, yeah, please stay tuned in the future. Hopefully I can reverse this and we will deep dive into Linda's specialties as well. So, mm-hmm. And then, like, hopefully, like I say, hopefully there's something you can take away from this and hopefully it can be something that will get things in motion to help change life and,
Many more.
Okay. Yeah. And thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Jace. Bye-bye. Bye.